Hello again, listeners. This is Chris Marshall with Classic Learjet Foundation. Thank you for joining us for this, the second episode of our interview with Leading Edge Aviation Solutions Joe Carfagna Sr., Chairman Emeritus, and Joe Carfagna Jr., Partner, President, and CEO.
Well, that sounds pretty exciting about this time of Executive Air Fleet. Can you kind of follow on then with how things flowed and the story of what then happened to lead up to your company today? There was a time of transition, wasn't there, at least?
Sure. But anyway, so to answer your question, after EAF was in existence in 1983, it was purchased, and ultimately a few years later, after an investor had it for a few years, it became what jet aviation is in the United States now. So Jet Aviation bought them in 1987 or 88.
88.
And that's when my father left, was when Jet bought them and started his own brokerage firm at that time.
So can I make a real quick comment here? You know, Classic Learjet Foundation is based in Wichita, and of course the Wichita aviation heritage goes way back. But one of the things that I think is so fascinating about being in communication with Leading Edge is the world of the dealers and brokerages out there, and that aspect of the business aviation market. It's not real prevalent here in Wichita, and we're just so glad you guys have been in touch with us and kind of telling this story about how the world was changed by the airplane beyond the manufacturing, the design, and the engineering, and the type of business opportunities that an aircraft like this created for people all over the world, and that was at the core of how your business came about as well. So we want to thank you for reaching out to us with this story, and I'd invite you to tell us more about how Wings Aviation International was formed and how that has then led up to the business that you are today.
Well, you started with a couple of people and did what he always did at EAF, and what my father did at EAF, besides, you know, growing the company, but you were the primary person involved with the aircraft sales during that time.
Correct. Getting new business in.
Right. And then when Jet Aviation came in with their own way of doing it, said, I'm going to go off and do this on my own.
I was friendly with the Hirschman family at that time, because they came over to learn how to do aircraft management. They were trying to set it up in Switzerland, and they had... Oh. They had some affiliations with Learjet way back and trying to make some new inroads there. And I thought I could help them, but they had their own preconceived way they wanted to do things. And when somebody buys the company, you say, well, you think you can do it better, then it's fine, and I'll do my thing. And we just could never – I don't want to become enemies with some old friends. So I retired out, and they – after 17 or 18 years of profitability, they had 5 or 6 years of tremendous losses, people leaving and all that stuff, and then they finally got out of reorganize it and do it. And now it's part of General Dynamics, and it's a big success. I mean, we had, at the peak, we had 150 airplanes, 148 airplanes.
Wow.
Both helicopters and about a dozen King Airs. We had an office in Dallas and one up in Boston at the time. So we operated on a worldwide basis. We had the first air taxi 121 or 135.2, they called it. And then we got the Gulfstream certified for international over water certification. And we had the first charter certificate for international flying of charter with Gulfstream airplanes.
My goodness. Quite a set of accomplishments there.
What's very interesting, at least in this part of the country, is there's still some older employees that are working in various areas of the industry that started their careers at EAF. There's like a common bond of those people that are still in this area. Some have become aircraft brokers.
Right.
Some are still chief pilots.
Yep.
But when he left in 87 or 88 to start aircraft brokerage, we did that for about 6 or 7 years before I came on,
right,
as a young guy in my early 20s. And so I'm here now 29 years doing this. And to where Christina had mentioned earlier, We took it on as a big undertaking about 2 years ago to tally up all the aircraft sales that we've ever accumulated since opening in 1989. And we're at 970 aircraft transactions with one that closed this morning. So we're 971. And out of that 971, 52 of them were Learjets.
And that's since Wings Aviation International formed in 1989 up to
now. That's correct. That has nothing to do with the airplanes that transacted at EAF and all the new Learjet sales back in the 60s and early 70s now.
So the development of the Lear 60 took place since the time of the formation of Wings Aviation International. Do you guys have any recollection of that time and how that airplane impacted the market and any thoughts on that particular aircraft?
It didn't stir up the market very much here in our area that we kind of focus in around the metropolitan New York area. There was a lot of competition of other models of airplanes at the time, and
the 35 was still the king.
The 35 was the bread and butter, and the 25 was a little better. And those are the airplanes that were just selling day in and day out. The 60, they're trying to twist something out of that airframe that just never got there.
Okay.
Well, it got there.
Yeah, but
it got there more slowly.
Yeah.
And lots of numbers over time. But, you know, I think if you ask anybody who had a lot of exposure to that Lear product, you know, they probably would say the same thing. If they had made the 35 the whole time, they would have sold a lot more airplanes.
It kept refining that airplane to a better airplane. His design, if you look back, he recognized, and a lot of conversations were back and forth with him in this thing, when the Lear liner was put together and the Lear's and selling it off to Canadair, that was the concept that he was going to follow to develop to the marketplace, because he recognized what they were starting to look for was a bigger cabin, more range, more comfort, and that kind of stuff. And that's when he sold the concept to Canadair.
Yep.
And then, you know, that was his legacy. They got commission or royalty fees for the first 100 airplanes plus a salary, and that's, you know.
Without getting off topic, we're going to send you some photos of all of the artwork we have hanging in the office here. It's all vintage aircraft magazine ads blown up and accumulated them the easy way. Bought them mostly on eBay and had a graphic engineer make them into poster-sized things. But one is really intriguing, and we'll send you this one. It's a newspaper clipping from the Wichita newspaper in 1966, and it's a wanted ad that they were looking for engineers of all varieties, from mechanical to aeronautic to electrical, for developing the new Lear liner. And
there you go.
It was in 1966 was the wanted ad, and we put it in it's in a frame. You'll see it. And I bought it on eBay for $1. But so it was just it's a little interesting piece that we have here.
Bill always had big ideas, didn't he?
No question. But to go back to your point, you know, more modern day, you know, the Lear 60, yes, there were a lot of airplanes sold. And then by the time they stopped making the Lear 60 in 2013, where the product had kind of run out of gas, the 45 had taken over.
Yes.
And it's just a shame the way that the Learjet name dissipated at the end, but it just had so many competitors by that time. It was, you know, they were going to have to come up with something completely revolutionary and new.
Right.
And they weren't prepared to do it.
They didn't have the wherewithal to make it all happen.
But they made airplanes for 60 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite the history there. What I want to do is tie in a little bit of the commentary earlier about the dealer and broker network and the importance of this organization that your company is a part of, this what's now is International Aircraft Dealers Association, and the importance of that organization to the business aviation market. Can you just talk a little bit about that and what the IADA does for the industry and its predecessor? We'd like to know more about that.
Well, the predecessor started in the early 1990s because people wanted to do business with like-minded people. This is an industry that's always attracted unsavory characters. And it was it grew in size, but it really began to matter when the name got changed about 6 years ago to the International Aircraft Dealers Association. I'll explain why. If you think about how regulated the aviation industry is, it's incredibly regulated who can operate the airplanes, who can maintain them, who can insure them, who can finance them, who can even
design, design, build, fly, all those things.
Anyway, anything that touches the airplane is extremely regulated except for buying and selling them. There's no regulation whatsoever. And there's no barrier of entry for someone to say, I'm an aircraft broker. So we decided we have to really fix this. If we don't self-regulate, the FAA may come in and regulate you anyway after time goes by. So let's go ahead and put ourselves on a pedestal. And we've got a little over 50 brokers around the world now that are members. And you have to pass not only an examination to become a certified aircraft broker, but you have to be accredited. So what that means is there's a fairly long laundry list of things that you need to be able to claim and prove that you've done over time. It's to be in business for at least 5 years. It's to have a brick and mortar office. It's to have multiple employees. But most importantly, it's to a certain number of units that of turbine aircraft that you have transacted. And you got to show written proof that you did it, because that weeds out the person that is selling one or two airplanes a year, and it's a casual, off-handed endeavor for them. You know, we're running this as a full-time operation here, transacting 30, 35 airplanes a year. This is what we do. We're clearly better at it than the person that does one or two a year, and that's what all of our compadres within this organization say, is if you're in this organization, you know, you're already a top-tier player.
And I think it's very important for a purchaser and a seller to have the confidence that their transaction is going to be handled, first of all, in line with all the requirements of the FAA for doing the transaction. And of course, international transactions become quite a bit more complicated. And then there's always issues of airworthiness and title transfer and lien releases and a host of other things that have to happen and happen correctly.
Yes.
And of course, the money gets kind of big, you know, when you're up in the aircraft values in the tens of millions, then there's quite a bit at stake for both parties. So having a reliable and trustworthy brokerage certification, I think it's got to mean a lot to those people wanting to buy and sell the higher end airplanes.
Beginning to mean a whole lot since these changes took place about 6 years ago. It's beginning to be very meaningful. And, you know, just tooting our own horn for a minute, forgetting the IATA component of it, the whole history that we've gone over with you during the course of this interview goes all the way back to the mid-1960s, and here we are now in 2023.
Yep.
Our heritage in this industry probably goes back about as far as anybody's does that's in the aircraft brokerage business. And that's why we have all of the artwork we have on the walls. Our slogan is that we've been in business aviation since there has been business aviation. And the Classic Learjet Foundation, as soon as I learned about it several months ago, absolutely struck a nerve. And I saw it and said, this is a very good cause for us to become part of. We can contribute to it in terms of content. He was there.
Absolutely.
We dealt with this with the product for so many years. I think you'll find some other, when we get you introduced to some other IATA members, they're going to have similar stories, but none that go back as far as this does to actual dealing with Bill, getting recruited by Bill Lear to go sell.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, there will be plenty of other brokers that are in this organization that have a lot of history with this make and model.
Thank you for that rundown. So what I'd like to get to is how the the name Leading Edge Aviation Solutions came about and what it is that differentiated your new company name from what it was prior. Can you tell us a little bit about that 2004 time frame?
Well, at the time, that was 2004, and at the time, the industry, you know, if you compare it to the 1970s, the 70s was the Wild West. There were no rules, and there still weren't any rules in 2004, but what was happening was it wasn't the chief pilot making the decision anymore to buy the airplane. Maybe they had some influence, but it was the CFO that was driving, you know, for a larger company. The CFO didn't just rely on what the pilot said and said, let's go buy one of these. Now it became more of an examination and a financial analysis and things like that. We added that to our repertoire and changed the name and brought in some partners. And it really just kind of, the name made you think with the word solutions in it, that it was not just about transacting airplanes anymore. It was about helping you figure out how to optimize owning an airplane and putting analysis into motion rather than just knee jerk, we think you need one of these. So we put a lot of homework behind, and we measure the results of what we've done after the fact with clients so that it kind of comes full circle, so that we have reasons to stay in touch with clients for years after they've bought their airplane.
Well, very nice. Fast forward from 2004 to about 2010, seems like there was a kind of a big handover of responsibility within Leading Edge. Can you talk about that just a little bit?
Right after all of the happy, fun, and exciting times we had in 2008 and
2009,
I was appointed to become president of the company, and that was in 2010, I believe. We've never grown to a very large size because we're very hands-on, and we are a boutique-style firm dealing more with wealthy individuals than we do corporate. We're 11 employees total. Our clients are our best source of our advertising. They refer other people to us. So here we are years later. It's a much more sophisticated process, but it's still the same significant purchase that it was 35, 40 years ago.
Absolutely. Well, was there any kind of a formal retirement for Joe Sr., or is Joe Sr. still get involved on certain transactions? Joe Sr., are you active in the company these days?
No. It's all theirs. Good, bad, or indifferent. It's all theirs.
Well, I hope you're enjoying your retirement. We appreciate your history of how Joe Sr. has been involved in business aviation since the earliest days of Learjet back in 1963 and 4, and the Model 23, which is the aircraft that our foundation is in the process of acquiring and restoring. What I'd like to do is just touch base on what the Classic Learjet Foundation's mission is we intend to restore and operate our Learjet Model 23, the first one ever sold to a customer back in 1964. And of course, we want the airplane to be flying. There are many nice Learjet 23s that people can go see in museums, and we celebrate that. We want ours to be a flying, living history product out there, making all that noise, and people can see it flying and demonstrate it at air shows and so forth. But as you've touched on, Joe Sr., you know, Bill Lear was a very colorful character. He was a genius. He had many inventions to his name. And we want to bring that story of entrepreneurship and technological innovation from that era, in that early 60s, mid 60s era, up into today, so that we can hope to inspire and educate people of all ages, especially younger students, to consider a career in aviation with all the stuff going on with electric vertical takeoff aircraft, you know, alternate fuel, unpiloted aircraft. There's so many developments going on in aviation that we think the Bill Lear story and the Learjet story, and especially the dedication of all the employees, is very inspiring to people. And to hear your part of it, Joe Sr., and the progression of your experience and how that experience has now led to this healthy, active, aircraft services company, Leading Edge Aviation Solutions today. That in itself is very inspiring, and it opens up our awareness of just how expansive the business aviation market has become since those earliest days. And we also celebrate how Leading Edge, and especially Joe Sr. and Joe Jr., you both have been a part of it since the very beginning. So we celebrate that history together. And I'd like for either one of you to talk a little bit more about the services, you know, just beyond the buying and selling. I see on your website that there's much more that you can do for a client than just broker a deal. What can you tell me about that?
I think one of our real strengths is helping a first-time buyer figure out what type of airplane should be bought and whether they can justify the purchase of an airplane. You know, we have a couple different products. We have something called a fleet plan. We have a feasibility study. And these are the analytical pieces that in many cases, when someone comes to us right away and they say, I want to buy a this or I want to buy a that, I said, well, you know, that, I like your enthusiasm, but unless we help you figure out what's really right using our experience, we're going to stop you right there, and I want to start with a white sheet of paper and say, what do you need an airplane to do? And maybe you're right. Maybe you need to buy an X, or we ought to consider a Y or a Z. And we do a lot of that. We do a lot of that consulting type of work, and we do a lot of measuring of financial forecasting for ownership of different types of airplanes over time. And you can look at a five-year net present value of what one decision means versus another if you decide to buy a this or a that. And so some clients appreciate that, and they live by it. And other clients, when they come to us with that preconceived notion, we say, well, we still want to do this for you because it's not much in terms of cost. Buying the airplane and hiring us to do that is a much bigger fee than doing one of the analytical studies first. But I'll never forget, we had a client says, I absolutely want to buy a Global Express. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, I used to sit on a board with a company and I frequently flew on the Global and I loved it. And I went on and on explaining, you know, this is probably a lot more airplane than you need. And, you know, the costs of operating this airplane to just go where you need to go seems pretty excessive. And I said, I think you probably ought to have us do this analytical thing for you so that you can get a feel for that. And he said, okay. He said, so for this amount of money, you're going to tell me what a dumb decision I want to make. And I said, yes, that's basically it. And we mapped it all out for him. And he said, yes, this is a really stupid thing, but I want it. So at least we quantified what it cost him to have what he wanted.
Yeah. Well, it's refreshing to hear that you work pretty hard to make sure that the client is getting the airplane they need and that, you know, after the sale, they'll probably appreciate the fact that they got that kind of guidance. So
yes.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time, guys. I think we've pretty much been through it all. I do want to mention one more time, your company has a very robust and attractive website, leas.com. And there are some things on there that are very historical. You have a great blog page, which I have read many of those entries there. There's a great one about history where you actually display some of the classic advertising that you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. It's worth checking out, leas.com. And then Classic Lear's website is classiclear.org. And we're not quite as sophisticated as you guys are with your website, but hey, we're trying and we're getting there. So any final comments, either Joe Jr., Joe Sr., before we wrap?
If it weren't for that product, I don't think we'd be here right now.
Nope.
Yeah, we'd all be doing something different.
Yeah.
It gets, well, a lot of roots go back to Lear, to all of manufacturers, to all of salespeople, executives, and everything else. Somewhere in there, they learn something from it.
That's absolutely right. Well, thank you for your time.
Innovative guy, and
maybe the Elon Musk of his day.
That's probably a good equation. You know, you look back at all his accomplishments and everything. You know, the car radio. He invented the car radio. Nobody says anything. The Learjet Stereo 8 tape player. My God, he made more money on that than he did in the airplane.
Yeah.
And things like that, the ADF and things. He was a crazy, crazy genius.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Learjet fans, we thank you for listening, and we thank the Carfagnas for their unique view of business jet history from the perspective of a current-day reputable aircraft brokerage and services company with deep roots back to the earliest days of the Learjet Model 23 development program. Watch for future podcasts about business jet history from Classic Learjet Foundation.